And yeah, thanks for the questions. So I guess I'll start with the customary or soft law and hard law or treaty-based approaches. And I don't think that they should be in competition. And the way the Outer Space Treaty came about, it was as the result of what were first resolutions at the United Nations, and they were later codified into what became the Outer Space Treaty. So I think and I think this is expressed in the resolution language from the UN General Assembly, that the door is open for if useful and desirable outcomes come from these sorts of conversations, then it may one day become part of a treaty. And I don't think trying to do a hard law top-down treaty as the primary goal to begin with, I don't think that's the right approach. I think that is the treaty is the outcome of political processes that take many, many years, and this is one of those political processes. So I think the treaty should be seen as perhaps an end point, or even just, well, nothing ever ends in politics, of course, but in terms of the specific processes here, that is an ambition to achieve perhaps later, because unless you have that political goodwill and the trust that the soft agreements or the voluntary agreements that we already have, if they already work quite well, then more people will be ready to entertain the notion of a hard treaty. So I don't see them in competition, but I think soft law and less rigid agreements have to come first, then to as a foundation to build on, because that's what's happened in the past with the Outer Space Treaty, which we now all use as a framework for these conversations. Then onto the warfare matters. In particular, I don't see space-based interceptors or space-based missile defense as a particular concern. I mean, I have an unpopular opinion that I don't think ballistic missile defense is something that will work in the context of nuclear war. It doesn't really make much of a difference. They are more useful as technological test beds for sensors and other systems that are useful in other applications, not space-based interceptors. And as we heard from Laura in her presentation, to have an effective space-based missile defense layer, you need so many interceptors, the costs are going to be, well, astronomical. It's just not something that attracts a lot of my attention and time. It's just not a serious subject in terms of practical issues that need to be resolved, or even a serious military capability. It's still very much in, you know, a small scale marginal capability at that point. And then in terms of the low hanging fruit, well, I think those comments get the heart of the problem I raised in my presentation. The problem is that you will not get an exclusively peaceful environment in Earth orbit when most of the major military, well, all of the major military powers on Earth, including the P5 and the Security Council, continue to use outer space for military purposes. All those countries have to learn to live with the existence of the potential for conflict in outer space as part of conflict on Earth. So what we have to do is look for those agreements where we can find quite, you know, boring everyday agreements on what sort of behavior is good behavior for everyday non-threatening activities, such as traffic control, when we still have to live in that environment. Yeah, war could happen. We've managed to do that for the seas, again, coming back to earlier comments. Why can't we manage that for space? We've learned to live with the institution of war, you know, as an international system. We're not doing away with that institution of war on Earth. It's not going to go away in space. So I think we have to go for those low-hanging fruit and accept that continuing persistence of the risk of war in space. That's not going to change.